Radio Reverb Brighton Festival 2018. Now, all of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2018 on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
Yes, you're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Alita Denich. This is Tuesday's Brighton Festival special. We're here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeated 10pm and 9am the next day.
And I'm Megan Clifton. For the next 3 weeks, we'll be looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, creators and people who make it happen. Today we are hearing about events for younger festival goers.
We're going to be looking at some of the large-scale classical events.
We're meeting an artist whose work embraces the surreal, the sinister and the downright silly.
Finding out about a performance which celebrates a love story in London's East End.
And we're learning how to make applesauce the Dutch way.
Yes, that's in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We are live during the Brighton Festival Monday to Friday, 5 till 6 and repeated 10 o'clock on that night and 9am the next morning. And if you miss a show, there is a podcast to be had. Megan, I've never actually presented with you before because my usual co-host is Rebecca Sandals. She is unavailable at the moment, so delighted to have you
yes.
here.
Thank you so much for having me. Yep. So some of you listening might remember this voice from the Brighton Guide, which goes out outside of festival times, Friday 5 to 6. So that's what I usually do. But it's a pleasure to be joining you on this show today.
Smashing to have you on board. I think the next hour is going to be a lot of fun. We're peeping behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the people who make it tick, some of the programmers of events to find out what their kind of processes were behind it, and meeting some of the artists and performers to give you the lowdown on what's happening in the Brighton Festival. So it's packed with events for children and young people. Pippa Smith is one of the people who makes it all happen. Pippa, welcome to Radio Reverb.
Thank you. Hello.
We heard a little bit from you yesterday on the show with Saturday's Children's Parade. Let's rewind. I know it probably seems like a long time now, but what an amazing day that was.
Wasn't it incredible? Yeah. Didn't they do well?
Didn't they just? Yes.
No, I thought, I mean, it's just amazing what the teachers come up with. It's hell being a teacher nowadays. And, you know, to do that and come out on a Saturday and all the worry that it must entail, you know, when you've got sort of 32 tortoises or 40 tomatoes walking along New Road, you know, and one of them sees their parent. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you just, the mind boggles as to how they actually cope with the teachers. So I'm just, you know, shout out really to the teachers of Brighton and Hove.
Yeah, so this year the theme was art. I guess in keeping with David Shrigley, guest well artistic director, being an artist. Was there any of David Shrigley's work there?
No, because it was paintings.
Oh, okay.
Yes, right. And he doesn't really do paintings. I'm sure the teachers and children would have risen to it had they got David Shrigley out of a hat, but I think that when they did the hat in November, he wasn't in it because we were very much focusing on sort of colourful paintings. Well, he's got a lot of fans, you know, a huge amount of fans. When I was standing with him at the start of the parade, were people rushing up and saying, "You changed my daughter's life."
Wow.
You know, oh, really? And one of the daughters whose life he changed is coming along to meet him at the guest director's guests event.
That is very cool.
Which is really nice. We have an annual event, I don't know if you know, it's sort of a bit under the radar, called Guest Director's Guests, where young people between the ages of about 17 and 19 who want to be whatever it is that our guest director mm-hmm. is, come along and meet him and have a coffee and ask questions.
That is really fascinating because there is no one really like David Shrigley. So the stuff he does, it is quite inspiring because he's very much himself and he's managed to sort of carve a whole career out of doing that. So I'd want to meet him.
You'd be amazed, actually, how many people there are who are doing quite witty, clever drawings at art school at the moment who want to meet David Shrigley, but who are doing something completely different. You know, it's not derivative at all, and they want to meet him because they're sort of within the same world, but they're different. And I'm really looking forward to the meeting. It's always great. I mean, Ali Smith with her young people
she was
amazing,
yeah, yeah.
You know. And she read all their... They each sent 500 words before they came for the coffee. And she'd read them like forensically. It was fabulous.
Oh, that's really lovely.
I know.
So children's events are a huge part of the festival. Come on then, Pippa, give us a flavour of what's coming up.
Well, what's coming up at the moment is for me is Penguins and Apples. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to be talking to Apples, or Rebecca talked to Apples, didn't she?
Later in the programme,
Later in the programme. So delightful as the Apples are, much as I'd love to run on about what a great show it is and how it is sitting in a yurt, which is a good place. Mm-hmm. To see applesauce made with a cooker, I feel.
Is that what's going on in that? It looks mad. It looks absolutely mad. Yeah, I'm trying to find a 1 to 5 year old I can borrow so that I can get to that.
At the right age to come. but also it's really almost, I think it's almost sold out. It's on the cusp. I think there's maybe a few yurty seats left.
Oh, lovely.
But they do actually make... they do make apple sauce with a real cooker. So the yurt smells of cooking apples.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. And well, I think they're telling us a bit more about that later, actually, about how that's done.
And it squirts into little bottles on a little truck. I mean, it's beyond exquisite.
But what I always say to people as well is that if they see that a show is sold out, then quite often there are returns at the end. Because I know a lot of people buy shows very early on. Then things change in their lives or, you know, maybe they've become ill or something like that.
Stuff happens.
Stuff gets in the way. Yeah. So very often it's definitely worth checking on the festival's website, brightonfestival.org, and also checking Brightfest on Twitter.
You're great at the adverts, Melita. Yeah. That was very good.
It was good, isn't it?
I'll add to that there are often tickets because sometimes, for example, we keep two aside for the artists for each show. If they're an artist from the Netherlands, they're probably not using their two tickets. You know, their mum and dad probably are in the Netherlands. Yeah. So, you know, there are extras turn up. So let's talk about penguins. Shall we talk about penguins?
Go on, then.
Yeah. So the story of the penguins is that they were in New York Zoo and they're real penguins. There is actually a book called And Tango Makes Three. And they were two male penguins, Roy and Silo, and they fell in love. And then the keeper found them sitting on a stone. And they were trying to hatch an egg. So so the keeper gave them an egg that was a sort of a spare egg from some other penguin. And
so they couldn't have their own egg.
Well, they were boys.
They were boys. Oh, I missed that. Well, that's lovely.
This is about blended families. It's great.
I totally, that went right over my head. I didn't realise. Oh,
so
gorgeous.
They sat on the egg, Silo and Roy, and eventually the egg hatched into a little girl penguin, or she is in this story. And they then teach her to swim and to dive. And it's all done in the most exquisite dance. And I went to see it in Birmingham and I did it in a day. So can you imagine a trip to Birmingham, an hour show, and then a trip back.
Wow.
And by the time I got home, I was still smiling because it was so exquisite and I was so pleased and so proud that it was coming to Brighton that I didn't care about the journey. I mean, honestly, it just made you feel all warm inside this story.
So it was 100% worth the journey.
It's 100, yeah.
I mean, and Birmingham.
No, yeah. I just got to go to Sally's Benny, so they've just got to go to Grand Parade, you know, and it's a great show.
And when is Penguins taking place? Everyone's going to be going, all the time, aren't they, the Penguins?
It is very It's all dance. It's just exquisite, exquisite. And they're such lovely boys. Oh. And they have this lovely baby penguin. And it's Saturday the 12th of May. There's a couple of shows then, 2 and 4.30, and Sunday the 13th at 11 and 2. Which is a relaxed performance, and 4:30.
So what's a relaxed performance?
A relaxed performance is a performance for people who've, especially younger people, obviously, in this case, who find it quite difficult to sit still and shut up for a very long period of time, which sometimes is all of us, actually. But in a relaxed performance, people who have relatives that they want to bring along who do find it difficult to sit still and shut up needn't feel a bit worried because everybody else has got relatives who may not want to sit still and shut up.
Yeah. Nice.
And we do have a sort of chill out area usually that you can go to and make a lot of noise and then
so
maybe
come
back.
You can dip in and out.
You can dip
if it
in
gets
and
too
out.
Much.
Yeah, it's just relaxed. It's what it says on the tin. So we're doing quite a few of those actually across the festival. But yeah, the penguins have got a relaxed performance. But I think actually it's such an intense show. I think people would be really swept up into it. Can I go on to Sniggle?
I'll let you do Sniggle, Pippa, as it's you. As we've got you here, talk about Sniggle.
Because I don't think people have got Sniggle. And I think Sniggle is a really difficult show to get. Sniggle is only for babies.
Okay.
And you have to be, and obviously with their adults, but you do have to be non-walking. So it's not for bigger children. You have to be a non-walking baby.
Okay.
If you've learned to walk since you bought your ticket, we might let you in. But on the whole, it's for non-walking babies. And Caroline Bowditch, who is Sniggle the Snail, she calls herself... well, we call her a leading, but she calls herself a disabled. She runs a defines herself as disabled and runs a disabled dance company. And it's a very, very low platform. And she is sniggled as snail. And she moves along the platform. If you look at the pictures, you will see that she has shortened limbs. And she moves along this platform. And the babies are drawn to her like moths to a flame. I promise you, in Edinburgh, we sat there in the back row and these babies like took one look at this exquisite snail moving along the platform and they were just following her. And the platform is so low that they can sort of keep pace with her as she tells the story. And there's a cricket and some other insects in it. And, I mean, it's just a lovely story. And the point is not that they are people with disabilities, but in a way, the disabilities do make it extra special. Yeah. And I also think that there's some... I was talking to Beth, actually, the senior executive producer today, and she was saying, isn't it important that people take their children to a show like that?
Yes.
And it's just what's happening on the stage. This person happens to not be walking and the rest of the time is in the wheelchair, but on the stage they're an artist presenting something beautiful and exquisite, and the babies don't give a toss, frankly.
You learn from babies. They just know what they know, and they just look at what they look at, and they love it.
And then in the future, maybe, you know, it just might knock a tiny prejudice out of the window before it's even got going.
Well, yeah, this is it. And people often define disabled people by the things they can't do, but I'm making a really good snail here, and I'm really good at hanging out with these babies and like being all up on their level, and that's something that's been inspired by, you know, that's people. You don't realize what people can do. Everyone is different, and you're kind of defined by our differences and our characters, and maybe this show wouldn't have existed without these disabled artists. Well, it wouldn't have. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I booked it, Megan. You got it.
And sniggle is a great word. Can I just say?
Sniggle's a good word.
Yes. When can people see sniggle?
And people will be able to see the sniggle on the 26th and 27th, Friday the 25th, apparently, at 11, 1 and 3:15. But obviously check online, check your brochures. But that's what I've got.
And taking place...
Oh, in the Founders Room at the Brighton Dome. So a very nice, easy one to come to. And you can... Did you know that we gave golden tickets this year to the best models, to the best makes in the Children's Parade?
Okay.
So we gave away 6 golden tickets to the best makes in the Children's Parade. And they are on display in the foyer.
Nice.
So what you got was the privilege of carrying your thing all the way back to Brighton Dome.
Oh, no.
So can I do my last show?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. Oh, I don't... Can I have two?
Oh, go on, make it quick. You're the one who's got to go. We've got an hour.
Well, no, I wanted to talk because it's different from the brochure. I wanted to talk about the bandstand on the seafront. It's the Morag Myerskoff bandstand on the seafront. It's completely free. It's billed as happening on Children's Parade Day. It's not going to. It's going to happen next weekend. It's brand new, utterly beautiful. Page 7 of your brochure. It will be an incredible bandstand. But I'm very proud because we've got BIM programming, Brighton Institute of Modern... God, I'm not sure that's
music.
Right.
No, that's correct.
It's music, but I think it might be...
Oh, it's Brighton Ireland. Brighton Ireland, just about
they've
everywhere
changed
else.
It.
The earth, the universe and everywhere. Right. It's true modern music, yeah.
Anyway, local music school is programming it with young people from the whole of Saturday, the 12th, I think. And then Sunday the 13th, all afternoon, is a Cayley on the seafront with the Sussex Pistols from 2 till 5 and a rollicking Cayley on the seafront. All free, and of course you get to go on the seesaws as well, on the pivot seesaws.
Yeah, they're great.
As well, because it's all in the same area underneath the I-360. My final show... I've got two final shows. One is Don't Forget the Tempest at Boat, which is, you know, Shakespeare.
Shakespeare in the open air.
In the open air.
Brighton Open Air Theatre.
With the Lord Chamberlain's men. And there you... I no doubt you'll be talking to them at some point. Mm-hmm. But their USP is that they're all blokes.
Lord Chamberlain's men are all blokes.
Penguins, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lord Chamberlain's men are all blokes, so the women are played by blokes, which is...
Which is Shakespearean, which is accurate.
Mm. I think that's maybe the idea.
Yeah.
And then there's Toby Thompson Toby Thompson was actually here last year as part of Kate Tempest's programme. She said about him, Toby Thompson is the future. He's just this wonderful young man, and he's doing a piece at the Brighthelm called I Wish I Was a Mountain, and it's a Herman Hesse story, which I'd never heard.
Right.
And it's about people being given their wishes. But he also plays the piano, and it's really exciting, and I think it may be the Kate Tempest effect. But we have these Pay It Forward tickets. Do you know about them? Have you talked about them?
Haven't talked about them yet. Tell us.
Pay It Forward tickets. So when people buy tickets, they're asked if they'd like to buy a ticket for someone who can't afford one.
Oh, that's lovely.
And they do.
Great.
Because we have wonderful audiences, and they do. And then we offer those tickets out to various groups. And Toby Thompson with I Wish I Was a Mountain is a top seller to the people who are taking up the Pay It Forward tickets.
Great. Mm.
So I think that might be the Kate Tempest effect, because, of course, Kate went out to your place, and and we'll be offering those tickets to people in our communities out of central Brighton. And I'm just wondering if it's them. I don't know who it is, but he's very popular. Mm. And it's going to, and it's, there again, it's a delicious show.
Terrific. Well, Pippa Smith, thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us on Radio Reverb. And well done for another successful year in the Brighton Festival. I know we're only a few days into it, but it's looking good. It's selling well. So congratulations on everything that you're doing. And here's to another great Brighton Festival. Many more to come, I hope.
Well, thanks to Radio Reverb for your love and support.
No worries.
It's always a great pleasure. Thank you very much, Pippa. This is Radio Reverb. This is a dedicated Brighton Festival programme. In a few minutes' time, we're going to be hearing about an East End love story. Let's take a break with some Brighton music. This is Brighton's Yonica, and the track is Bubblegum. Cracking music from Brighton. You're listening to the dedicated Radio Reverb Brighton Festival show, celebrating some Brighton music as well. That is Yonica and their new single, which is Bubblegum. What No Fish is the tale of a love story in London's East End, told through a series of doodles and cartoons. Danny Braverman created the show when he discovered Ab Solomon's touching images long after his death. I went to meet Danny as he took a break from setting up the show, which opens tonight at the Brighthelm Centre.
Well, the origin of this show is a discovery that I made, which was of a family treasure that was at my mum's, and we discovered these shoeboxes full of wage packets, and the wage packets each had a picture on them. And it transpires that the pictures were drawn by my great uncle, who's called Abraham Solomons. I kind of knew they existed when I was a kid, but I'd never seen any. And suddenly, years after he died, because his son had died and my mum had cleared out that flat, suddenly we had all these pictures. So I thought, I need to do something with them. Didn't know what. So I realised, of course, these were a kind of a diary. They're a chronicle of his life. He gave one a week, every week, to his wife, sort of for the housekeeping, but on it was a picture from 1926 all the way through till 1981 when she died. So for 55 years, every week he'd give her a picture. And so I found the story in them, and I realised, oh, there's an interesting story here, as well as realising what a brilliant artist he was. So I'm a storyteller and I'm a theatre maker. I'm not a visual artist at all. So I hadn't actually performed for years and years and years. And there was an arts centre up in North London called the Arts Depot in Finchley. So we did a kind of scratch performance. A friend of mine, the director, Nick Philippou, saw that performance and we created the show. And it's kind of taken off since then.
So tell me then, how does the show look and feel?
It's simple. It's me. It's a geezer telling a story with some pictures. But I think the fact of its simplicity means that the audience are kind of drawn into the world of Uncle Ab's art. It's both particular and universal. It's very much a particular story of East End Jews, my family, Hackney, Dalston, all that. It's also universal because it's kind of about love, and it's about history, and it's about why we are creative and why we make art. It's also, it's sort of about people who are on the margins. My grandparents' generation were the children of immigrants, and they had to make some decisions about how they assimilated, how much they were going to subsume their identity or not. But also he had two boys. You find out their story. One gay, one disabled. They've both got stories which are really about people who in their lifetime were on the margins. So there's a little bit of that. It's about lots of things, really. And I've now performed it all over the world. Two performances ago, I was in China, and it resonated with people in Shanghai and Chengdu. So there's some universal stuff there, just about family, love, relationships, death, of course.
I was wondering as well if it was as much a love story about a lost community, because the East End was associated with Jewish community, Jewish life and culture, latterly Afro-Caribbean culture, yeah, and South Asian culture. And a lot of that has been destroyed either through gentrification or the vast developments that have taken place around that area.
Yes, there is that. I mean, if my grandparents could see Dalston now, you know, hipster central, you know, you can't spit without hitting a coffee bar with 27 different kinds of coffee and all that stuff, and £2 million flats and all that stuff, they wouldn't know what it was all about. But, you know, there's still very vibrant, diverse community there. And, you know, it's very much a Turkish-Kurdish area these days. And there's something about that it retains its character because of its transience, not despite it. You know, that kind of myth of, you know, the East End is and was always full of these kind of Dick Van Dyke cockneys and always will be. It wasn't. It's always been a place of fluidity, and it's always been a place where people have had quite complex identities.
What's been the response from other members of your family?
You know what? There are cousins everywhere. One of the great things about these families was they were huge. One of the things I talk about is if all my great aunties and uncles were alive today, and none of them are, there'd be about 40 of them before they all got married, right? So each of those great-grandmothers had about 10 kids each. So there are cousins everywhere. There's a cousin coming tonight to see the show who I've never met. So Uncle Ab's niece is coming, you know. And this happens, that happened in Australia, that happened in Edinburgh. I won't say too much, but Ab's sister-in-law is a bit of the villain of the piece, and she's no longer with us. She'd be 100 and something if she was today. And there are some people who knew her who say, I've got the depiction bang on. Everyone has someone in their family, don't they, who interferes in other people's relationships and their marriages and thinks they know best. Well, that was Celia's sister Lily, and we find out a bit about her. And there were people who know her and knew her who see the show who think that actually that's bang on. And there are people who are still alive who knew Celia and Ab. And some, the odd person who saw Ab create the art, and I think they're very moved by it and feel connected to it very much, yeah.
That's Danny Braverman, and he's talking about his show, which is called What No Fish. That's taking place at the Bright Helm Centre. It runs tonight. If you're listening to the Tuesday show, it runs and also on Wednesday, both nights, 7:30. And when I met Danny there earlier, there were just a handful of tickets left. So try your chance at a festival standby for a tenner. Have a look on the festival website, brightonfestival.org. Check out their Twitter, which is at Brightfest, or just pitch up at the Bright Helm Centre and maybe just try your luck.
Brighton Festivals 2018. All of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2018. Radio Reverb, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
Okay, now we have more on the show Apples we were discussing earlier. It's a show for the very youngest children, up for some festival fun. Apples is at the Spire, which is a beautiful venue up Kemptown Way, this coming weekend, and is aimed at 1 to 5-year-olds. The audience enter a cosy yurt to discover an unusual apple tree and three crates that burst open with energetic kitchen tools and all kinds of wacky implements, which come together to make delicious apple sauce. Without speaking a word, the Dutch performers Cassia and D's invite their young children to join them for a sublime feast for the senses that will leave you taking a second look at the ordinary things in life. Rebecca Sandals, our Rebecca who is usually presenting instead of me, caught up by Skype with one half of the couple who performed the piece, Diska Griners, and asked what had inspired them.
Our inspiration for the show is really our own son, now 6, but when he was 1.5 or 1 year old, there was so little nice shows for him. While he was so enthusiastic and wondered by little things like steam coming out from a pot and trucks and bicycles and moving stuff, we thought like it was really easy for someone to capture in his imagination, but nobody did that in a show, only with big music, sound, color things. So we thought, let's make it ourselves. We started with those little things that he was wondered by, put it together, and then, yeah, well, then it it came together and became a little storyline.
It's really for the little children, and often people might think, well, my child's maybe too young, they're only two, they can't sit still for too long.
Yeah.
But that's just your audience then.
Yeah, that's our audience. Yeah, we made it especially for the little ones. It's non-verbal, so there is much variation. And the total length is also only 25 minutes of watching our show. And then the children can play themselves for that time too. So they can, go on and do things themselves because they want to.
I noticed that in the description that it says 60 minutes including playtime, and I thought I want to go to shows that have got playtime included.
You're welcome. A lot of the times the parents and the adults are playing too,
so it's in a yurt. So why a yurt and why apples?
It's in a yurt because we started playing it at festivals and wanted to create space where the concentration was best. Well, we started with red balls and improvisation about that. And later the red balls became apples. And now it's our main character. It's a kind of an elementary thing, an apple, I think.
When your audience is predominantly such little people, how do you anticipate their reaction and cope with what could be quite a rowdy crowd in front of you?
Don't usually have trouble with that. Of course, sometimes there is someone who can't concentrate for that long, or it's not that long. And there are all elements that children are fascinated by. So I think that helps a lot, and we also keep it small, the audience, so it makes it easier to focus, I think, and the yurt helps too.
Yeah, so it's not overwhelming, and they'll sit there sort of mouths open and aghast in that way that captivated young children do.
Lots of the time they are, and they are so with the story that it's over before they know, I think, and then they can play themselves, so they just go from one thing to the other.
It sounds great fun. Thank you so much for your time, and have a wonderful time in Brighton.
So that was Dieske Greiniers talking to Rebecca Sandals via the hit and miss magic of Skype about apples. That's at the Spire in Kemp Town, with three shows during the day on Saturday the 12th of May, and three shows on Saturday the 13th, all at times to suit young children. And on tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking with a couple of the people behind the Spire to find out about this unusual venue in a former church. Yeah, it's a beautiful former church, and what they've got to tempt us with during the festival.
That's all in the Brighton Festival Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, with Megan Clifton and Melita Dent. We are live during the Brighton Festival, Monday to Friday, for the next 3 weeks. It's almost 2.5 weeks now. I can't believe time is flying.
Yeah, it's whooshing past.
But we're action-packed with festival goodness for the next couple of weeks. So if you want to find out what's going on behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, maybe you're going to a show and you want to find out more about what it's about. Maybe you're looking to show in the brochure and thinking, not sure about that. Tune in, we will give you the lowdown. And if you're coming from outside of Brighton, then obviously this is the place to hear all of that. If you miss the show, we've also got a podcast. So it's Radio Reverb's dedicated Brighton Festival programme.
Yes, yes. And now our reporter, Jack Claremont, has been to see Jungle at the Dome. The London-based seven-piece soul and funk band broke through in 2014 with their track Busy Earning. And they've appeared at the festival just last night. So before we hear from Jack about the show, let's find out what the audience made of it.
Right on time, back by the beach. Still gonna bring the heat.
Hey, it's Jack here, and I'm outside the Brighton Dome after Jungle have just absolutely torn the roof off the place with a killer live show, a mixture of their beautiful debut album and a couple of new tracks too that are coming out soon. It was a real, real success and a real good way to finish off a boiling hot Bank Holiday Monday. But let's see what everyone else thought.
Incredible. So very excited about the new album.
Yeah,
awesome.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
I thought they would be different from their studio recording, but
They were insane. Like, I thought I was expecting something different, and they were literally the exact same in a good way.
I saw them in Brixton in November, but they're much better here.
So great.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Joyous.
Yes.
Best track?
Time.
All of them. That was a new one, which was really, really good. I haven't got a clue what it's called, but it was awesome.
I love their new tracks. Yeah. I think they're really good. Really, really good. Yeah. Love their new stuff.
Julia. So, yeah.
Julia!
It was brilliant. Lots of fun. Really good atmosphere. Excellent. Lots of dancing. Really good time.
Amazing.
Yeah. That was great, man.
Really interesting stuff.
So, Jack, how was the show for you?
It was awesome. I mean, they were so, so great. They absolutely bring it live. They're already really tight, right? Their album, which madly is 4 years old. It still sounds super fresh.
What's the title of their album?
Just called Jungle.
Just called Jungle? Yeah. Oh, I see. Jungle, Jungle.
Jungle, right, Jungle. Yeah. And they came out 2014, and they kind of have been fairly quiet since. Until today, I believe they're dropping two new tracks this evening. But yeah, that's what they were saying last night at the show. They still bring it, and live, it's an even more bombastic sound. Just really, really impressive.
Awesome. So had you seen them? So you're obviously a fan. Had you seen them before this show?
Yes. So I'd seen them a few times, actually, both in their own gigs and at festivals. And they do both really well. They know how to work their own crowd. They also know how to get everyone up on their feet. So it's really great. But this time, they've got some new material coming out, and which has taken a slightly different direction. They've kind of gone by way of Detroit and Chicago. It's housier. And now they're live. Their old songs have picked up, and their new ones are maybe even better.
That's incredible. Yeah. Yes. Were you expecting these new tracks when you came out to see them?
No, not at all. Although I guess there was a sneaking suspicion. You were like, 4 years on, they've got to be planning something, right? So it was, to me, what was really standout, and what a lot of people were saying outside afterwards, was that they weren't expecting the new songs to be that good. When it's the first time you've heard it, and yet you're singing along at the end of it.
Oh, it's one of those. And it's always a bit frightening when there's an amazing debut album, and you're almost like, oh, you know what, please don't.
Yeah.
Because the second album's always such a challenge.
Yeah, I think they're going to smash that second album syndrome. I think they'll be all right. But it was also just a brilliant way to kind of open up that first week of the festival. After such a boiling hot day yesterday, it was just like super, super lovely that we had that perfect music for where the evening's kind of still hot, still warm, but you're cooling down and everyone's just in a good atmosphere, in a good mood, good place.
Amazing. It was really cool. Bringing the vibes.
Absolutely.
So just very, very quickly, these new tracks, do you know where people can listen to them if they're interested?
I believe what's happening is they're dropping them tonight. So
sizzling hot.
Yeah, so they're going to be available. From what they were saying at the show last night, they were saying that they're going to be around from tonight onwards.
So all your usual channels, probably, hopefully, Spotify, iTunes, all that.
Absolutely, all the good places.
Well, Jack Clarriman, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Revo. We're going to be hearing more for you over the course of the next 3 weeks. Glad you enjoyed the gig.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. And just a quick roundup of some of the things that are happening over the next couple of days. We already heard from Danny Braverman, What No Fish, which opens tonight at the Brighthelm Centre and tomorrow as well. Adam Kay, This Is Gonna Hurt, is going to be talking about his experiences as a doctor. That's at the Brighton and Hove High School tonight. It is actually sold out, but, you know, usual rules apply. Check the festival website, check the Twitter. And opening up on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday is the Flying Lovers of Vitebsk. That's taking place at the Attenborough Centre for Visual Arts, based around Marc Chagall's paintings. That looks absolutely fascinating, that one. And also, Adam is at the National Theatre, by the National Theatre of Scotland. It's not at there, it's by them. It's the true story of a young transgender man who is making his way from Egypt to Scotland, a story which crosses borders and genders. Going to be talking more to them tomorrow, but it's at the Theatre Royal from Wednesday through to Saturday. Let's hear an extract from the performance.
In English, you talk of the teacher. And I don't know whether it's a man or a woman. It's irrelevant. Same with the student or the friend. In Arabic, the word changes. It matters whether my friend is a woman or a man. But I need to tell you that.
Just lie! Princess! Just lie! All of this begins with Egypt, where I was born.
I was born in Glasgow.
The Secretary of State does not believe your claim to be a transgender man.
can do what Mama raised me to do. Tell the truth and show the world who I am. I am Adam.
Well, that's a little taster of Adam by the National Theatre of Scotland. It's a theatre role from Wednesday through to Saturday. Music there by Jocelyn Pook as well. Hoping to be talking to them on tomorrow's show to find out more about that. Sounds like a pretty amazing performance. This is Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. Melita Dennett and Megan Clifton with yes, the... sorry, Megan, get it right.
No, that's fine. That's all right.
I put my teeth in the wrong way around while that was going on. Brighton Festival Live, 5 till 6, Monday to Friday during the festival. Repeated 10 o'clock on the same night, and then the following day at 9 a.m. with a podcast to follow. And classical music is always a big part of the Brighton Festival, as well as lunchtime concerts, events at Glyndebourne, and more intimate classical performances. This year's two big hitters are Benjamin Britten's War Requiem, taking place on Saturday, and William Walton's Belshazzar's Feast, which closes the festival, both of those at the Dome. I went to the Dome to meet Jill Kay, who programmes the festival's classical music strand, and also crept in to a rehearsal of the War Requiem.
Hello, I'm Jill Kay. I'm a classical music producer for the Brighton Festival. So it's a big year, particularly this year. Our own Brighton Festival chorus is having a 50th anniversary. The chorus was formed in 1968 to sing Belshazzar's Feast, an amazing piece by William Walton, with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra in the festival that year. So we decided to try and recreate that as much as we can this year. So we've got the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra coming back. The chorus will sing Belshazzar's Feast in the closing concert, along with Britten's 4C interludes, very beautiful music, and The Lark Ascending by Vaughan Williams, which is a really heart-rending piece. Belshazzar's Feast in the second half has got very nearly 300 musicians in it. It's got everything in the percussion section, including the kitchen sink. There'll be over 150 people singing in the chorus. It's got two brass bands that are going to be sited up in the circle that add to all this mayhem going on stage at various points. So you'll get this kind of surround sound Dolby system going on. So it's going to be a really exciting and amazing end to the Brighton Festival.
Dare I ask, did anyone who performed in that piece 50 years ago, are they going to be here or maybe in the audience?
There are, I think, three members of Brighton Festival Chorus who are still in the chorus, who joined in 68 and are still in the chorus. They joined as kids, of course, and they're still going. So there will be three people singing, and there are a couple, actually more than a couple, there'll probably be about at least a dozen who sang, who are no longer singing in the choir, but going to be in the audience. Yeah, it's going to be quite a moment for Brighton Festival Chorus. Very exciting.
One of the big pieces is Britten's War Requiem, so marking the centenary of the end of the First World War, and also at its time a piece of pan-European peace and reconciliation.
It is an extraordinary piece. If anybody has never heard it before live, do try and get tickets. There are just a few left. It's not easy music. I can't say this is going to be easy listening. It kind of tracks the story, because Britten really was experiencing the Second World War at the time. And he's depicted basically the two main characters, tenor and baritone. The tenor is a British soldier and the baritone is a German soldier. And using the war poem, Wilfred Owen's war poems, and the setting of the Latin Mass, the texts are incredibly moving. The two soldiers sing mainly with a small chamber orchestra, which is set on stage, so it's almost like a whole little unit of its own. They both talk about going to war, and, you know, almost like whistling as they go. Have no idea what they're going to be let into. There is a moment where the baritone sings about lifting up the great long arm of the gun, these great big enormous guns that they used in the Second World War. And then basically all hell lets loose. It's a battle. You are really taken into a battle. And in fact, in the scores, it's everybody is marked to sing or play just as loudly as possible. I mean, we could have structural damage here. I mean, it is the sheer volume. But equally, it is going to be very quiet. I always think that 140 people, 50 people singing incredibly quietly is almost more moving than everybody kind of, you know, really shouting loudly. So it's got everything from, you know, these very quiet, amazing moments to the battle scene. And then at the end, the two soldiers meet and they realise they've died. And they basically fall asleep and go up to heaven. We have a children's choir. Our own Brighton Festival Youth Choir are going to be sighted up in the circle. So you get this sense of these heavenly voices calling them up. It really is an astonishing piece. So anybody not experienced that, it's not going to be a light-hearted night of classical fun. It's really quite an event. But, you know, everybody should experience it once in life. It will be amazing, absolutely amazing.
That's Jill Gay. Jill Kay, who programmes the festival's classical music strand, talking about Benjamin Britten's War Requiem taking place this weekend, William Walton's Belshazzar's Feast, which closes the festival, both of them at Brighton Dome. And San Francisco artist Brett Goodroad is showing a series of 44 A4 paintings created in Sumi ink. That's a special kind of Chinese watercolour ink. Toe Boy, or Toe Buoy if you're American, runs throughout May at the Phoenix Gallery at the Level. At first glance, much of the work looks a bit abstract, but look closer and you'll see tiny details which tell a story, add humorous touches or ask questions of the viewer, such as, is that really a rat on a woman's head? I went to the Phoenix Gallery to meet Brett to take a closer look.
A lot of this work kind of has a kind of a narrative quality that also inhabits a kind of a non sequitur in the composing of the image, in a sense that it kind of sparks off something that isn't necessarily a part of the actual articulation of the work, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because I was looking at these, and they're quite small scale. They're A4, mm-hmm. and they're ink, mm-hmm. pen and ink, and they're monochrome.
So
they're
brush, all mostly brush.
Brush, okay, so they're black, white, and grey. First of all, they look quite abstract, and then when you look closely, they've got tiny yeah. little details within them.
Yeah, abstraction always has been kind of a difficult word for me, because I am actually pretty abstract, but I have such a reverence for kind of being able to describe and representation. But at the same time, there's always this part of me that wants to kind of take apart things and make things difficult to understand. So it's kind of within the enigmatic tradition. Right now I'm looking at one that's riffing on Titian's Flaying of Marsyas. And I've turned his head into a deep sea waterfish. And right next to him we have a figure that has a pig snout. And a bit of an 18th century Rococo dress. There's also could be a woman in the background, a child. So I kind of see them as there's very specific articulations. Like the one we're looking at now is kind of a bird figure with a twig in its mouth, and then there's a kind of a head of a man. Who knows what's going on with his mouth? Could be his tongue sticking out, but then the rest of his body is somehow turned into an elephant's foot. And then there's also some reference to pottery and different things. So there's actually a lot of painting, historical painting references. So if there's like a painter buff, somebody that really understands the history of painting, they'll kind of see little quips and jokes that kind of happen throughout the work. Like the Flaying of Marsyas is a bit of a quip and a joke. The deep sea fish, though, is actually kind of a symbol of reverence for the actual work and how important it is to the history of painting, but it's also important to me. Titian's a kind of an important painter that I look at.
That's interesting, actually, because I thought I spotted some Rembrandt
here, maybe.
I mean, this character here, first of all, it you can't see it very clearly. When you look closely, it's a kind of Prince Regent or Sun King type character, but I'm getting a real sort of Rembrandt vibe off of that.
Yeah.
And I've seen things like Monet, and I thought I saw some Blake references
there. Blake is huge. Blake is huge in this work. You know, that's something I actually thought about quite a bit coming out here. William Blake is a tremendous influence on the work, and kind of his insane mysticism, you know. And in some ways, I kind of feel like my work, whether I like it or not, kind of sits within a kind of mystic place. But I think what the aesthetic mystic that exists in my work, which it is an aesthetic mystic, the thing that that is has to do with that the work is really generated through intuition. And why do I feel that intuition? What's the groundwork of that intuition? And Virginia Woolf talked about the groundwork of her imagination. And what do you fill that with? Well, I fill it with images. This one you say is Rembrandt. I think Durer. I always thought that, but I see Rembrandt too, but I just see these kind of, there's like a lizard right here and a cattle sniffing the lizard kind of thing. Of course, there's also in this image is your guys' horse chestnut tree. There's a horse chestnut tree leaf right there. I think it's a pretty fantastic tree.
To me, it seems that there are contrasts in these pictures. Some of them have a lightness, an airiness, and a stillness to them. Some of them feel really, really stultifying, and as if there's a sense of foreboding, almost as you might have in a dream.
Yeah. When I originally set these up, and of course, I didn't make them with any kind of narrative in mind, but there was what I found started really coming out is that there's moments of open space, but then there's almost like kind of a dystopic kind of. Like this very last one over here kind of references the Sun Dance, which is a Native American kind of a dance to do with a tree. It's a really violent kind of episode. I grew up in Montana, and there was the Blackfeet there. And of course, we were all taught Native American studies and all that. But I have this real strong memory of this ceremony that where a man would be tied up with like hooks in his skin and stuff, in order to kind of create a vision of some future for them when things were bad, like a drought or whatever, and their feed, didn't have a lot of food. Anyways, this specific one kind of references that. But again, like a lot of the references aren't whole references. It's not anything being totally direct. I have a revulsion against like being direct. I kind of think that if anybody thinks that they know what they're doing, then I kind of tend to not trust them. So I kind of always like to be in a place of kind of doubt, I guess, is a good way to play it.
And there are elements of humor as well. They do ask the viewer questions. So, for example, why has the woman got a rat on her head? It looks like a rat to me. It may not be a rat.
Right. It's a rat. Okay. Yeah, no, no, that's the thing. I mean, it's, I think humor, just like the non sequitur, is a way in which to spark off the narrative and make it acceptable to a person, especially in a contemporary world where we're so inundated with things. It's like, how do you get someone to look into an image and have them ask deeper questions, to have actually some kind of density of meaning within the image? And you can do that, at least I found in some ways, through non sequitur. Say, like, there's one image over there of a man sitting, and then there's a Pringles chip next to his arm.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Love it.
Yeah, and then this one, it's the woman. You see the rat on her head, but there's actually also a little motif of ancient Greek statuary of a woman that's like kind of that statuary, like really early statuary where it's kind of really crude. The human figure is almost kind of all the shapes are just kind of through time either is broken down into just like circles but you can tell it's a woman, different things like that. But yeah, humor is really important to me, and I think that's why I've obviously been attracted to David Trigley's work too. I mean, and actually I found myself thinking of him while I was making this work specifically for the festival. Of course, he was a presence in my mind and just sitting there, not necessarily, like I said, I was looking at him trying to like make a direct reference, but I knew that I had to bring humor to the work, and I always do anyways, but I knew I had to in some ways. There's another one where there's like a man peeing and he's standing on top of some weird woolly creature, and then, of course, right next to him is some guy like trying to climb out of a cave.
I thought that was someone hanging while someone was peeing next to them.
Yep. The person on the right is hanging, climbing, and then there's a guy down on the left, and he's peeing, and he's on top of maybe a Wookiee. I don't know.
Have you got a particular favorite? So either one that when you did it, you were like, "This is amazing," or it represents something really special to you.
Yeah, this one. This one right here, actually, the guitar, the person holding the guitar.
Now, that's one of the ones that I looked at, and I felt a real kind of serenity and a real stillness in that. There's a real sort of gentleness of somebody very, very engaged, looking at their guitar, and obviously, deep in thought and concentration. And I love these little, tiny little details around here. So fruit and wheat, ears of wheat.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I feel the same thing. I mean, and also it's that thing where like I'm always trying to describe. and the guitar, I think, really worked out. And I like the fact that, and you know, and I play guitar, but he has the guitar in his lap, and he's kind of cradling it in a sense. And he's, and his right hand is kind of practicing. He's just idly doing this, right? He's not actually playing, but he's looking at his left hand and wondering. It's not even negative thoughts. It could be just him, you know, there's some floral stuff there. It could be just playing with leaves or something. And in some ways, I feel like that's a commentary on the object of the left hand and the guitar playing and how it has to kind of float. And then that's it. And then the humor side, because a lot of the work also kind of starts kind of drifting into underwater stuff. He could have a squid on his head. It looks like he has a squid on his head, but it's a serious squid, right? Yeah. It's not a jokey squid, but it's kind of a serious squid. You know, I don't know, is this squid giving him... In some ways, I thought that was really great because octopus and squid are so intelligent, right? And so where would the squid be? It'd be on his head. So
you're from San Francisco. You live in San Francisco and work there. How are you finding Brighton so far?
You know, I didn't have an accurate image in my head when I showed up. I love it. I love your guys' ocean. It's vast, and the beach was great.
It's not as big as your ocean in San Francisco. Well, it's got to be safe. Come
well,
on.
Well, I'll say, well, right. Well, no, you get it's vast. You look out. It goes a long ways. What Ocean Beach has in San Francisco is crazy waves, crazy currents and crazy waves.
Yeah, we've got pebbles.
Yeah, you go out into Ocean Beach, you could get swept out, you know. But I think you guys could swim, right, out
yeah,
there?
Yeah,
you
yeah,
go out
yeah.
there swimming.
Yeah.
No, I love it.
I wouldn't recommend it this time of year. Only very, very brave people do that.
It's cold, right?
Yeah.
Super cold. So far, I mean, I haven't had a chance to explore a bunch, but man, yeah, the shops. I had some good tofu and chips.
That's very Brighton.
Yeah, I know, right? It was good. It was good. I liked it. That was good. And had some good coffee, you know, and... It's seen some wild characters, you know. It's like home, kind of San Francisco. It's got that style. I really like it. I mean, it feels like you can kind of do whatever you want here.
Yeah, you must go and see that for yourself, actually. Yes, that is a Pringle floating by someone's arm. Yes, that is a rat on a woman's head. And yes, that is a man with an elephant's foot. That's Brett Goodroad talking about his exhibition Toe Boy or Toe Buoy. And that runs throughout May at the Phoenix Gallery by the Level.
So, jazz legend John Sermon appears at St George's Church on Thursday. On tomorrow's show, we've got an interview with him from Radio Reverb's Mark Johnson, who presents the Slipstream show. But today, let's hear what Mark's looking forward to from John Sermon's appearance in the Brighton Festival.
So, John Sermon will be playing on Thursday, the 10th of May at St George's Church. Tickets are just £16. The festival standby is £10. It's a British saxophonist who last year was awarded the Ivor Novello Jazz Award for his contribution to jazz, which spans 5 decades. Part of a richly talented generation of jazz musicians from the 60s, Sermon is revered internationally for his pioneering approach to composition, including the use of electronics, brass ensembles, choirs, string quartets and orchestras. And on the 10th of May at St George's Church, he'll be joined by the accomplished Norwegian pianist Vigleik Storas. And in the background is a piece of music from the album Saltash Bells, which was released in 2012, and this track is called On Standen Heights. So just a little bit of background information about John Sermon, originally born in Tavistock, Devon. He initially gained recognition by playing baritone in the Mike Westbrook Band in the 1960s. His first playing on record was with the Peter Lemmer Quintet in 1966. And after further recordings and performances with jazz band leaders Mike Westbrook and Graham Collier and the blues rock musician Alexis Corner, he made his very first record under his own name in 1968.
You've been listening to the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Megan Clifton on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, DAB and online, Monday to Friday, 5 to 6pm during the festival, repeated 10pm and 9am the next day.
And thank you very much to today's guests, Pippa Smith, Danny Braverman, Disco Grigneurs, Jill Kay, Brett Goodroad and reporters Mark Johnson and Jack Claremont. Back with you tomorrow at the same time. Going to hand you back to Mark Johnson. Looking forward to John Sermon and coming to the Brighton Festival. So from me, Melita, thanks very much and bye.
Thank you, goodbye.
And has been involved in many, many music projects, playing well outside his box, and including projects with church organs. 1996, an album called Proverbs and Songs. With a classical string quintet and with the London Brass Band on an album called Free and Equal in 2001. He's also played with one of this programme's favourites, Anu Ebrahim from Tunisia, Tunisian oud player. And we can have another track now from John Sermon from an album on ECM called Selected Recordings.